far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we wish our viewers a Merry Christmas as we review the second Gundam The Origin OVA. Yogi Bear, when was this made?
I don't know, like 2010.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
Wait, is that the CGI one?
Yes.
I think I barely remember that.
Well, I remember when it was coming out in the chat, we had posted like the trailer. Yeah, on Wikipedia it says it's 2010. It was in 3D/CGI. Well, the some of the actors were live action, but the bear was CGI. Well, the bears, because there's also Boo Boo as well as Yogi Bear.
Yeah,
but but yeah, have you seen the Flash show on TV?
No, I haven't seen anything of the Flash. So,
well, the main villain is the same actor as the Ranger Smith character from Yogi Bear.
Are you serious?
So he's like this serious, menacing character in The Flash. And in Yogi Bear, he's like this goofball ranger who is trying to like keep the bear from taking picnic baskets and shit. So it is just funny to see how much variety that guy can play.
Well, I mean, as an actor, you're under contract to do whatever it is you have to do. So
yeah,
I guess he plays better as a villain in The Flash than freaking Ranger Smith in a live-action crappy Yogi Bear movie.
I mean, he did okay for what he had to go with, but
yeah,
but that isn't much.
I know we got
George Jetson is only 27 in this.
See, I was trying to get you away from looking at the AIM chat because I knew if we sit here and read everything Josh posts, like, no, we'll never get around to Gundam, but it'll just be like Fox can't label top 40 cartoon characters of all time. It's a terrible list. I'm just going to minimize my chat window.
I have a feeling they just picked a bunch of random numbers and assigned it to a bunch
of
random characters.
For the record, I was going to say George Jetson or Fred Flintstone might have been like a 4 or 5.
Yeah, it should have been a lot higher than 27.
Yeah, 27's too low. Jeez. Right, the chat's minimized. You do the freaking same thing, so we're not distracted.
Okay.
All right, so I know we got a bunch of stuff to talk about at the end, especially like, well, whatever Donald Trump wants to do, and Chris Chan and everything. So I've got a list, but we'll get to that.
Oh, that's what normally do. Those latest videos are unspeakably bad.
Ghost?
No, the latest
Chris Chan
videos are just disgusting.
Shut up. We're going to get to it.
Okay.
All right. Welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, where I am one of your hosts, Dustin, and with me is John.
Yep.
And while we stay on topic, all the time. We don't go off topic ever. We'll see how far that goes. I'll be honest, I don't know when this episode's coming out. Probably around or after Christmas. Who knows? But this time we're going to talk about the Gundam the Origin, the second Gundam the Origin OVA. I don't even know what the official title is for that thing. Just Gundam the Origin 2, maybe?
I think it was Artesia's Sorrow.
That's a very fitting title, because boy, did she ever experience some sorrows, mm-hmm. especially towards the end.
Yeah, it's a very depressing episode.
Yeah, even I'm still depressed, and that ended 30 minutes ago. Like, you're like, I'm going to go take a shower, and I'm just, like, thinking about it. I'm like, I feel like utter crap of what I just watched.
Yeah, well, now you know why Artesia is so stoic later on. It's because she's seen some shit.
Oh, yeah. That's some heavy shit right there. I don't know. Like, what did you think of the OVA?
Well, I thought it was a fine adaptation of the manga. I didn't glance through it this time, like last time, but it goes basically with what I remember from it. And, of course, there's changes like there being CGI or whatever, but, you know, that's just how it's going to be with the modern animation.
Yeah.
It doesn't upset me that much. It's to be expected for 2015.
I mean, I jokingly said, like, on the chat, I was like, oh no, Sayla's tying a bandage with her, like, right arm, and then the manga was in the left arm. This is filler. We haven't even checked what M has said about this anime. I mean, I don't care to. I don't know.
I mean, I'm just guessing that they're going to be nitpicking over some, like, extremely minor changes. But last time there was, like, a space battle at the start that wasn't in the manga, whereas this time I think everything in this was from the manga.
Should it not surprise you, because I said this in like a couple episodes ago, that I have not read all of Volume 5 yet, and I've had that for a very, very long time, at least over a year, and I'm trying to get to it, but...
Yeah, well, the series finishes this month.
Okay. Then I'll get to it whenever I can. Mm-hmm. But I know from what I skimmed through, like, when Origin came out early this year, which I feel like saying last year, it's about last year, that, I mean, when I skimmed through it, like, there was parts of it, I'm like, yeah, I remember that, and that, like, oh, that's cool. And I wasn't sure if they're going to just adapt whatever we got entirely in that Volume 5, because, I mean, we're going to spoil stuff on here anyways, in case anybody didn't know, but, like, basically...
There's a bunch of deaths.
At the end of the
manga,
from what I skimmed through, like basically, the real Ashara's novel gets killed in an explosion, and then Eduardo.
That's going to be in episode 3.
Yeah, that's going to be in episode 3 now, but like Eduardo takes the role of Char, or Castfall does. And then that's when he goes to the military academy and everything. That's what I skimmed through in 6, and that's all I remember and seen, so.
Yeah, but, Sayla's brother takes over the identity of the person that they move in with during this Texas colony, which is the real Char Aznebel. So,
yeah. I just like how it's, that's the Texas colony, and they've got, boom, Texas in large, bold print on the side of the colony. Mm-hmm. I believe maybe Yasuhiko might have been to Texas once, and notice how everything, how big and in your face everything about Texas is, and he's just like, wow, people in Texas really love this state of Texas. If I have to incorporate it into an anime, this is how I'm going to do it.
Well, for some reason, he has a character say, well, this colony is really more like Wyoming or something at one point.
Yeah, it's a frontier-looking colony, but like when they showed it like the first time, in the episode, it was like, you know, like, I just saw, like, some dirt, and I saw mostly more dirt than grass in, like, a quick screenshot when they're talking about moving the kids up there. And I was just like, yep, that's Texas in a nutshell. Texas has some green, but it's mostly barren and as hell. I'm like, just like the real Texas.
Yeah, there's a lot of West Texas where no one really lives.
Yeah, unless you want to, like, establish El Paso and be the border between Mexico and America. Good luck with that. I mean, there's a river that runs along there, too, so... No, I actually really like this OVA a lot. So I didn't see any issues with it other than some of the stuff we're making fun of. I mean, that we're making fun of because we knew, like, if M saw, that's probably what they would say.
Yeah.
I mean, I really enjoyed the song that Haman was singing in the bar of Club Eden. And then there was, like, in Japanese subtitles. And I was like, well, that's really cool. So I'm wondering, like, what voice they got to or singer they got to sing that song, because it was really nice. And then you're saying, oh, no, it's in English. We're never going to get it. We don't deserve to have it or something.
Huh? Oh, I was just surprised that there was, Japanese subtitles on it when it was an English release. But I guess this is, like, the official subtitles, right, from Daisuke and wherever else had it streaming.
Yeah, well, Amazon. The file that I streamed it on came from Horrible Subs, and we know the reputation of Horrible Subs is the fact that they just rip off from Daisuke and those sites, rip off official sites and say it's their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then but just to tweak one or two things. So really, you're getting the Daisuke experience just through a middleman, which is called Horrible Subs. No, I'm not giving them any credit for fan subbing because everyone knows what they do, so, because they're that horrible. Da-dun-ching. So, but
yeah,
I mean,
I don't think that they added the Japanese subs. I think that was probably on Daisuke.
Yeah, and they left that in there.
But yeah, I think that this was pretty good. They had some good scenes, like the one with Romperal in the bar after the song that you're talking about.
Yeah. See, this is how I look at the this is how I look at that scene. So imagine that Haman is the voice of all the Gundam fans and they're having a good time, and Romperal is kind of representing us, so we're just like, yeah, we're enjoying this anime. And then you've got the freaking Federation pilots, that's the freaking anti-Twitter and M and all those terrible people that just like want to rag things because it's not too Japanese, just to ruin it. So then we have to come in there and have our fists wrapped up from the bartender and just punch the crap out of everyone in there. Because we want to hear our song. Gosh darn it. Dang it. That's my analogy when I thought about it. I was like, you know, Federation is the analogy of M and anti-Twitter.
And
everybody
on
now.
who is Zeon?
Look, I didn't think that far, okay?
Okay. Maybe Zeon is 4chan or Reddit or something.
Maybe Zeon is like Anime Expo. I don't know. Again, I didn't think that far. Like, I just took that scene in that context. And Dozel coming in, well, again, I didn't think that far, so. No, like, this actually kind of, like, this starts off with a recap, from the last episode. Pretty much, if you don't remember what happened earlier this year, that kind of recaps it for you. And this thing came out, like, back in early November, or no, it came out on Halloween Day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, we need to watch this eventually. So now we're in December, like a month after it came out, and we're watching it. And surprising enough, like, I figured Colony Drop would have wrote an article about it by now, but last time I checked, they didn't. Actually,
really?
Let me just go ahead and check now, just out of curiosity's sake.
Did they hate the first one, I would assume?
Kind of. Maybe. I couldn't really understand it. They're like, we really love Gundam, but we're not too sure about this one. Yeah, they've only got the last thing they posted was back in March, and that was just the first OVA for Gundam The Origin. So no, they haven't said anything about this yet. So Sean O'Neill needs to step his game up.
Yeah,
whoever's going to write the next Colony Drop article.
I remember reading the article, and I don't remember exactly what it said, except there was like a lot of unicorn bashing, and they were like, this can't really be good because unicorn turned out bad.
That was kind of their assumption, too, but, I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know. To each their own opinion.
There's very different source material between this and Unicorn.
Yeah, the difference between that is the fact that we're getting the official translated source material coming over here compared to books that have been fans translated on a Wikipedia site. Or whatever Andy told us that he found all that stuff about it and how he read the books that way, which was just like looked incomprehensible on how to get a hold, like how to read it. Unless
yeah,
you know Japanese.
He posted some like text from it, and it was like
about smoking.
Yeah, it was like obviously this is not being directly like one to one adapted for the anime version, whereas This, on the other hand, if you like the manga, there's really no reason why you shouldn't like this, because it's basically the same thing.
I don't see why there would be an issue. I mean, like, this one, it didn't look like they were trying to do anything too different from the manga anyways. It's like, I mean, they stuck to the source material. I guess let's just kind of get into it. I mean, like, basically it starts out with Char and Sayla, because they're living in Spain at the beginning at, like, zero or Universal Century 0071. And they're with that really fat Spaniard guy that's taking them in. And then there's a bunch of refugees that are coming over to Spain from Africa because of, like, it's being too barren to live. And that's interesting because, like, it's kind of like a mirrored image of what's happening in Europe now, where all the refugees from Syria that are trying to evade ISIS are going into Europe, and they're all a bunch of refugees and everything. And it's like all Europeans' fault that, or up to them basically to try to take care of everyone. And they're like, no, we need to push these people off on someone. And America is having their hands up like, nope, 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 not us. Nope, we're not going to do it.
Oh, well, Obama, not so much, but Donald certainly is.
Hold your breath on that. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Sayla's like taking care of people in the village, and they live in that nice mansion. And of course, like, old man Raoul is basically like telling or teaching Castfall stuff about like the truth of the Zabi family and everything, and trying to get him educated on that. And that's like basically his education is coming from one old man.
The old guy seemed really pissed off.
Yeah, he's still like, after 3 years, like, you're still pissed off. Well, I mean, when you're old, like, you just stay pissed off at stuff. That's just how it works. No, but then they get into this thing where, like, old man Raoul is trying to get with, like, Anaheim and trying to, like, take over the Zabi family, like, through making a business deal with them. And the fat Spaniard guy is like, no, why would you do that? And, you know, I take these kids in as my own, and, you know, I could give them up, and, you know, they would be on their own. And, you know, and then old man Raoul is trying to plead with them on that. And then just Sayla gets feeling sick, and she's talking about the moon and when she'll see her mom. And then all of a sudden there's like some sort of coup attack against the place. And, but this also happened in the manga where, apparently like they sent an assassin in to take out the family. Well, the assassin kills old man Raoul, but he does it in knight armor.
Yeah. That was the, like, one of the best parts of the past arc in the manga was.
Yeah, I remember
how well the knight was drawn.
I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, how did the guy find his way into the armor and then stayed hidden and everything without anybody else knowing except that knight? Unless, like, you got the two coup people, and one of them was like, hey, check out this cool stuff over here. And they're like, yo, they got armor. Like, yo, dude, put it on me. Let's just see what it looks like. And then he got his one buddy sitting with the other buddy and putting him in the armor and everything. And then he's just like, yo, give me that sword. I'm going to try this sword out. And he's like, all right, I'll give you the sword. And then, like, the guy just goes on this power trip like, dude, I can murk every effing person in this whole place. And then just starts going to just assassinate people. So, because they're saying that, like, that was the agent, and then, like, the agent is of the Zabi family, like, his idea for cover is to dress up as a knight.
It's not like this is set in ancient times where a knight would be, like, a conspicuous disguise or something. Inconspicuous, like, it's pretty obvious that there's something going on when a knight shows up in your house with a sword pointed at you.
Well, not even show up before, you can hear the knight before he starts, before you even see him.
Yeah.
Because they're going up the stairs, and then Castro's like, say the quiet. And then you just hear, clang, clang, clang.
Yeah. No, it was pretty obvious when he's coming, like, it's not exactly a ninja where they're trying to be stealthy.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, the knight thing reminds me of, have you played Resident Evil 4?
No.
Okay. Like, there's this one, you go to, like, towards the end of, like, the last part of this giant castle you have to go into. And there's one part in the sewers where you have to go, you're actually the blonde-headed chick or the president's daughter. And you have to go in these sewers to get something. And I'm sure I'm going to find a YouTube video on this or some Let's Player like screaming his head off. But basically, like, the first time I played it, like, when you're in the sewers, you walk past all these, like, suits of armor and stuff. And you're like, oh, okay, you know, it's dark and spooky like a Resident Evil game should. And so then you go to hit some switch, and then as soon as you're leaving, you hear this clang, 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 and then this knight starts charging at you. And I just lose my freaking mind, and I just start running up the alleyway, and like I like behind me, I just hear this clang, 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 just chasing after me. And then of course, like you have to get past the prison cell wall, like to the dungeon. And I remember like running past that, shutting it as fast as I could, and then about like 30 seconds later is the knight going clang, 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 clang.
It can't be too fast. I didn't realize I ran that fast. Can't be too fast to run in a suit of armor.
Yeah, I think that was the most freakiest thing about that whole game for me, other than like the invisible lizards or whatever in the basement. But no, like I just thought it kind of reminded me of that, but except this guy couldn't run too far. And then
his battle with Char was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually, I mean, like, because they go up to like some other like tower or something, and it said it was under construction, and then Castle's like, oh, it's under construction, and then it's like bam, he busts out of like the behind like the board and the cloth and everything, and it starts wailing on Char. Like it was something out of a horror movie, which made it really cool.
Yeah, it's like a very unique scene for a Gundam UC show, because usually it's all set in space, but this part it's like in Spain, and there's knights. It's very different for this kind of series.
Yeah, and then like Char works him like by stabbing the sword into the guy's helmet, like in between the lines of the visor.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then the guy is still like standing trying to attack Char, and then Char has to like basically football rush at him and shove him off the weakened banister of the catwalk there in order to kill him.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy crap. Like, I thought it was Dozel at first.
But he had already killed the old guy and thrown the fat guy out the window.
No, the fat guy didn't get thrown. He was so fat that the window of the body mass, like, was too great for the window, and he fell out of his own window.
Oh, is that how it works?
In a fear of not being stabbed by the knight.
Yeah. But he had so much blubber that it cushioned the fall, and he survived.
I was like, well, there goes Fatty! And then, like, you know, when the Yashima family shows up, which we get a first glimpse of Mirai.
Yeah.
And her father. Like in like an insurance thing, and he's like in the hospital, but he's like, oh, good thing I fell from that fall. I'm like, dude, what did you fall on? And number two, how much fat is there to protect your body from a fall that high? Clearly enough.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of covered this first part of this. But no, it was
interesting. And then after that, they decide somehow they think it's going to appease the zombies and make them not want to kill them anymore. If they live on Texas Colony instead.
Yeah, it's in Side 5 or Loom, which is like next to Side 3.
Yeah, and so then they move there and they meet
before that happens, like Mirai is able to see Sayla and Char real quickly in like the window. And then at the airport when they're leaving, that's when we get to see like little kid Amuro with his toy horror ball.
Oh, and yeah, then, like, briefly.
Yeah, and then his dad's there, and he's just like, Dad, hold up. And the dad's just like, boy, if you don't get on this plane right now, I'm leaving you here on Earth. I'm like, yep, that's Tim Ray for you. Dad of the year.
I think he shows up shortly in the third graphic novel volume as well. Probably in the third OVA he'll be appearing again, too.
Okay. I just know, like, when Sayla looked at Amuro, my first thought was, like, you know, that's the guy you're probably going to bone in about 10 years.
Isn't that in the novels that they fall in love?
I thought it was in, like, I heard, I thought Viku said it was like in the manga or something. Well, not in origin, but like they did a manga adaptation from Mobile Suit Gundam. And I've got like the first three volumes of that. But I don't know if it happens in that, or it probably does happen in the Gundam novel by Tomino.
Yeah,
but then again, that's kind of its own different thing than the show and Gundam the Origin, obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot of different versions of the One Year War, but yeah, it's in one of those. I haven't read the manga or the novels, so
yeah,
it's something to get to. But I'm waiting for the Origin to finish first before I move on to any other retellings of this story.
Oh, I've got... Last year for Christmas from Right Stuff, I've got the Mobile Suit Gundam, like, the reprint of it that they did a couple years ago.
The novel.
And that's sitting on my shelf. Yeah, I'm looking right at it. I bought
the originals at the Collector's Marketplace, and they spell Zion as Zion, like Israel.
Yeah, are you talking about the original printing of the Gundam novels?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've got those too.
Oh.
The ones by they were translated by Fred Schultz.
Yeah, I guess so.
But that was back in like 89 or 90 when he did that. I mean, like he did the best he could for like a property that like only really anime fans knew about it at the time through like fan sub VHS tapes or going to Japan or something.
Yeah, that was like when UC was still all there was, because there was. I think that was around the time when Char's Counterattack was coming out. So it was when the original UC story was still being told in Japan, and there was nothing that had come out here of Gundam.
Yeah, it probably by the time those books got translated to the States, I think maybe Gundam 080 was starting or getting put out, or maybe possibly 083 was coming out at that time. So they were still like in that whole Universal Century thing. And again, 083 was... kind of last UC thing that they did before G Gundam came out.
Mm-hmm. And then after 083, there's like I guess a little gap of a while, and then 08 MS was the next thing to come out, right?
Well, no, then there's Victory Gundam to tie back into the Universal Century era.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, Victory is so far...
How could you forget Victory, man?
It's so far removed from UC that it's like hard to remember that it even is UC sometimes.
I am stoked whenever Right Stuff puts out that Blu-ray set of Victory Gundam, because that is a series I literally never thought for many, many years we would ever get in the States.
I'll buy
that day one.
When you buy it, you should take some pictures and send them to Pancake Paradox and just like taunt him and say, I bought this. Because he totally hates
that
series.
You're a terrible person.
Yeah. Just be like, I'm going to be enjoying these bikinis women with rocket launchers, and you're not.
Or bathing in the bathtub with an anime chick from
Zanskare
Empire. Yeah, I remember that. And then jumping out of a three-story window butt naked.
Aren't they like biting each other and stuff in the bathtub?
Probably. I don't remember that too much detail. I just remember like we're going to take a bath. No. And then I'm just like, all this nudity happening at once, and then you just see his junk, and I'm like...
Yeah. It went on for a while.
Maybe that was censored on TV, I don't know.
No, I don't think so. He was, like, chained to the bathtub or something, because they had captured him, and, like, somehow he escaped, and...
Yeah, I just remember him jumping out of the window, and then... Well, then also you got the League Militaire chicks that, like, half of them die, like, within 5 episodes. And that was... We're talking about, like, 13 episodes in this happens.
Oh, the Strike Squad or whatever.
Strike Squad, that's it. Strike Squad. Strike Squad.
Yeah, those guys all die, I think.
Yeah, I'm a... Victory Gundam is a show I could rewatch again.
And speaking of deaths, there's quite a bit of that in this one that we just watched now.
Yeah, there actually is. I mean... once they get to Loom, then they kind of that's when they meet the real Char, and then Sayla's like, "Oh, he's like my brother, except with brown eyes." And then Casfall sees Char. This sounds like such a paradox, I swear, but it's just kind of like, okay. So then, like, Casfall sees Char, and then he's just like, "What's up, buddy? High five!" And they high five each other.
Oh yeah, they're like instantly best friends because they're like, hey, you're also like an Aryan guy. Let's high five. Like an Aryan guy. Let's high five.
Blue eyes. I'm hoping to get that upgrade cosmetically sometime. Well, no, so the cool part about this was the fact that, I mean, we'd mentioned the CG mobile suits. There's actually, like, Psy 3 has what's called a dark colony, which is where Dozel recruits Ramba Rao over there to test out their mobile loaders or the mobile suit prototypes. And then they were able to smuggle in, like, a Federation gun tank over there to use it. To see just how well the armor will hold up. So then they've got like the giant shield on the arm. And like the gun tanks, cannons can't penetrate it. And then of course like, and then eventually like, that's when we get to meet the Black Tri-Stars, which are on like this secret project to test out these mobile suits from the Zeon army. And then, Ramba Rao gets in there and then him and I think it was like, Ortega get into a huge brawl or something, or like in their mobile suits and fight it out. And then Ron Morales is kind of like, hey, there's all these like really weird defects and stuff. Like I'm wide open and this is not very comfortable. And Dozel's like, yeah, we'll notate that down. It's valuable. We'll update that in the next prototype. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one scene that's not in the manga, it might have been this one. I don't remember this being in there, but it's been a while and it has like not much relevance to the main plot of, the stuff with Star and Sayla, so that might be why I didn't remember it. But it might have been included as like a just an excuse to show some mechs off for the anime, because they do have to have at least some mech action, it being a Gundam.
Exactly, like you can't just like pop down a Gundam and then, or you know, Gundam show without any mobile suits in any vicinity, and then be like, is this a Gundam show? What's going on? And then, like, if that did happen, then you got the, you know, the Gundam fans are just going to clamor and be like, oh, this is terrible. There's no mobile suits in a Gundam. What is Sunrise thinking? Oh my gosh, worst company ever. Hashtag die Sunrise or whatever. Or Bandai. I mean, yeah, like you've got to even if it's not even in the original manga, then to like, you know, have some mobile suits fights, and that still adds to it. I mean, so if that is an added bonus from the manga, then good, because like, that was awesome to look at.
Yeah, there was a need for this scene, and it's CGI, but so what? That's just the way things are now. But it's not like it looked bad or anything. I mean, they did look like the robot models that you would expect them to look like.
Yeah, I'm sure people are going to be like, there's no Zaku's in this. It's like, well, this is in the process of making a Zaku.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that there was like a bunch of anal retentive stuff about the timeline not being precisely in coordination with the 0079 TV show or something. With when it said that the Zaku's were made or something. But who cares, really? I mean, they're not exactly in continuity with each other. There's like some changes between the origin manga and the original TV show, like the order they go to various places, and it is changed and stuff, so it's not exactly the same.
It makes sense. I mean, like, we're talking about like what happened in the third or fourth volume when they go to Jabra was in the fourth volume. So instead of them going all up through Russia and Asia to get to Jaburo, and you know, they get basically just stay south and cut through South America, which I've always been like, why did they not freaking do that? I was like, oh, wait, it's a TV show. They have to extend the episodes out.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, the origin is an improvement because it fleshes out the story of the original and makes it have like more context, make more sense. And like that's what these OVAs are all about, is the context of why the 1 year war happened and where these characters came from, like Char and Sayla, whose backstory is not really very well developed in the show, and the Zabbies as well, but they're barely in this one, but you know they're in the previous one and the next one more so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like, of course it makes sense, because it was always like, there's that implied backstory that Sayla and Char know each other in the original series. But there's always like, okay, well, how precisely do they know each other? How precise, like, what led to the events of them being in their positions? and everything. And then, you know, thank God Yasuhiko took the time to sit down and be like, well, there's never been an official thing, so I'm just going to do my own thing. And it's fantastic because Yasuhiko, I'd say, is a pretty decent storyteller. I'm just looking at notes. I mean, pretty much going back to, like, you know, the mass or Castfall and Artacia are settling down, and then Artacia's writing a letter to her mom, and then Castfall shows up and says, you know, he's got a really bad look on his face because he found out his mom died, and he gives a letter to Artacia, and they just have, like, the remembrance ceremony under a tree on the Texas colony, and then eventually that just kind of shapes.
Yeah, so they're showing her earlier in the tower.
That's right.
She had been seen by Rambaral's wife, I think.
Well, Haman, or I guess it's like, I guess they're still going out, or are they still like a couple or something? I don't know.
Maybe it's his girlfriend, but whatever.
They're still dating.
but yeah, she's there, and like, they haven't been delivering the letters to her that Sayla has been writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's all depressed, and she's like, I don't know if my kids are alive or not. And then Haman has to tell her that they are with whatever that fat guy's name is.
Yeah.
And then she, like, falls asleep. And I don't know if that's, like, when she died or not, or if that was maybe a little before she died, but she was looking pretty sickly then.
Anemic and everything. Yeah, like, she had, like, a very pale color tone to her to show that she's not well. And I'm guessing, like, she was probably already fighting a sickness before the kids left, or maybe it might have started afterwards. And, of course, like, with her being locked up in that castle and being secluded, like, she's already depressed anyways, and depression can lead to, like, sick, like, an actual physical sickness.
Yeah, and didn't you say you thought she was poisoned as well?
That's what I thought, too, because I think, like, they're giving her medicine, but it's just really slowly poisoning her. Because, like, they mentioned how Old Man Raoul was just like, yeah, you know, your dad was poisoned, but they poisoned him over time to weaken his, like, heart and everything. And that's probably exactly what they were doing with their mom, too.
Yeah, it could be.
That's what I think. And of course, but like at the castle that she's in, like, there's so much overgrowth on it because it hasn't been taken care of. And then, like, apparently the lady that was, that she's supposed to be under, like, seclusion under, like, she's already passed away or something. Or what's her name? The old woman from the other, from the first OVA that was, like, really liked, Mr. Daikun. And then she starts accusing.
Oh, they mentioned that she died at some point in this?
Yeah, I thought they said, like, she just, like, she's been, like, she passed away not too long ago, or, like, it was something recent. And then, like, and the care of the castle is just, like, in such bad shape. Like,
Oh. She's
just kind of, like, up there just all alone and secluded and, like.
Well, there is, like, some servant who, like, came in and tried to give her something when she was asleep. And then Haman was, like, yelling at him and saying, like, just let her sleep.
Yeah. But
and then Artesia finds out, she's all depressed about it. And then
like Castfall just snaps. Like, he's just like he's got a giant, like, he basically has, like, pure hatred in him, and, like, you know, they call the school teacher or whatever of Castfall and tell the fat Spaniard guy, and how he's like, he's just got, like, this really cold look to him and everything, and he's like, this kid freaks me the hell out. He needs to go or do something. And then eventually, like, Castfall sees that one guy that just keeps eyeing them, and then he's just, like, assuming that he's tailing them, which he probably is a Zabi agent or a Zeon agent on them. And then he just starts, like, have a brawl into the Esnoble bar saloon thing or whatever that they're in. And he about kills the guy until Artacia cuts in there and, like, yells at him to stop. And then, I just kind of, like, it was funny because, like, it's, like, this secluded colony and everything. And then when I look at that western town, I'm just thinking, like, Redneckville.
Yeah. It is funny, some of the settings in this.
It's like, pick a random, just pick a random town anywhere in Texas and you've got your western town. I can already think of one, Gunbarrel. There's literally a town south of Dallas called Gunbarrel. And I've talked to a guy when I had that customer service job, and I couldn't help but the joke with this town. And he says that the town is called Gunbarrel because there's literally 6 or 7 miles of a straight line of road. That, and then they considered it like a gun barrel. And then I joked with him, like, oh, so is the next town, are you in the county of Trigger? Or Slide Lock or something? Or is the next town over Buttstock? And the guy actually thought it was pretty funny. I couldn't help it. And I'm just like, Gunbarrel, Texas. Yeah, that's a Texas name for a town in Texas.
Yeah, that's pretty fitting.
Oh, what was it? There's like, no, the town that the actor that played Haas in Gunsmoke. Or no, I mean Bonanza. Like literally, there's like 200 people in that town. And the only credit to their town existing is the fact it's the birthplace of the actor who played Haas in Bonanza. And I know we've driven through it one time when I was a teenager. Don't even ask me where it is. I could not tell you. Maybe somewhere in between Waco and Austin. I don't know. Man, we need a
what is the town called?
That has Texas in it so we could just talk about Texas the entire time.
What is that town called that that had Haas in it?
I don't know. I think I know my dad knows, but
I can probably find it by looking at like the Wikipedia page for Gunsmoke. They probably have the
Oh, what the heck? This is our podcast. This is what we do. All right. Bonanza. You probably say Gunsmoke, but it's actually Bonanza.
Oh, it's Bonanza. Okay. Well, it's like another cowboy thing.
All right. Dan Blocker. DeKalb, Texas. DeKalb, Texas.
Oh, okay. I've probably been there. I don't know.
And that is, holy crap, located near Texarkana, actually. It's in Bowie County.
Okay, maybe I haven't.
Population was 1,699 at the 2010 census. And it's part of the Texarkana, Texas statistical area zone county, zip code 75559, all that good stuff. Yeah, it's like right outside Texarkana.
Well, then after it says that he was born in DeKalb on his Wikipedia page, it says they moved to O'Donnell, where they had a store in West Texas, south of Lubbock, and it looks very very Western. It has, like, a cowboy hat on it. There's, like, a picture of the it says Blocker on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It says it's now an abandoned building in the town, in the downtown O'Donnell. And O'Donnell is in West Texas that lies primarily on Linn County in Dawson County, Texas. And that is on way on the other side. That's like actually getting near New Mexico, or it's outside of, God, I don't know. There's something up there. I can't think of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at it on the map, it's only a couple counties east of New Mexico.
About so two or three, I'd say. It's like on the border of two counties, apparently. It looks like it. Man.
And there are only 1,011 people in that city.
Well, according to the 2010 census, it's 831.
Oh, I was looking at the 2,000. It must have gone down. Well, it says that they abandoned the railroad and completely removed it in 1999. So this is not a very happening location. Of course, the picture of the city is a grain elevator.
Yeah.
That's the main highlight of the city, a grain
elevator.
That's
probably the downtown.
It's like when I lived in College Station and the main highlight of the town was a water tower. Real exciting.
That's Texas. Oh, man.
And then under notable people, of course, it mentions that Dan Blocker lived there and moved there shortly after his birth. And then it says there's a small museum.
Phil Hardberger was a former mayor of San Antonio.
It says there's a small museum of Blocker memorabilia in this town.
It sounds like a tourist town for diehard Bonanza fans, or AKA the old people that watch MeTV and TV Land, that like, let's go take a road trip and hit up all these places that all our favorite shows are on from 50 years ago.
I think that AMC still airs one of these Maybe well, it's Gunsmoke. It's very early.
Called MeTV, and that's what Bonanza plays on.
Yeah, I've never figured out how to get to MeTV. Isn't it one of those bizarre channels where it's like a decimal number or something, like a sub channel?
Probably for you, it might be. Yeah, I don't know. I think it is for us, unless it is for my regular station. But like, if you got like our local cable network, it's got like it's on the digital channels or Northland.
I mean, I have DirecTV, but I've never been able to figure out how to get to that, or My Network TV is another one that supposedly exists, but I don't know how to access it.
You want to go back to talking about Gundam?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know, I mean, like, talking about Texas is getting kind of depressing, but that kind of fits into what happens with Artesia, because... So not only does their parents die, but also for the fact that her cat Lucifer dies. And then... All of a sudden, Castfall is just like, I'm my own man now. I can't be there for you. And then he just walks away. And then that's pretty much how it ends. Other than, like, the real Shara's novel is talking about how he's enlisted into the Munzo Military Academy for Zeon. So that'll lead up into, like, the ending part of what we got in the Volume 5 of the manga here in the States.
So, yeah.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I got nothing really else to add to that. I mean, that's kind of all I went through on the notes. I just noticed that, like, I noted how Sayla had, like, a little pony, and she was trying to ride it, and then was like, no, I'm too pooped and tired to ride, Sayla. I ain't gonna listen to you. And then, like, the real Char is...
She was, like, having a hard time keeping up with her brother.
Yeah.
And then she met the lookalike...
Yeah, because she's just like, wow, my brother got really good at writing a... Wait a second! I'm sure if my girlfriend saw that, she'd probably enjoy that and be like, oh, they're trying to draw this kind of horse. Because she loves horses and works with them, so...
Oh.
That's her thing. I don't hardly know anything about horses other than, like, if there's a race on, like, her or me. Like, once every couple of weeks, like, we'll watch it or something, but...
I had to ride one, like, right after I moved to Texas. Yeah. My mother's Texan friend was, like, watching me.
Yeah.
And she was, like, really into horses, and she had, like, a whole, like, barn full of, like, these little midget horses, miniature horses or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and she had me, like, see them all, and there are, like, a ton of them, and they, like, carry around carriages and shit, and it's, like, really strange.
No, I was actually, the last time I rode a horse was like her own that's like 12, 13 years old, and it liked me enough for me to ride it, and that was like the first time I rode a horse since I was like 8. So, there was a 20-year gap between the last time I rode a horse until currently.
Oh, actually, I did ride one once before that. I rode one once when I was 12 when I moved to Texas, and once when I went camping here in Arizona when I was like 9 or something.
Okay.
And I rode one there, too. Somewhere
out in the woods. Riding a horse is not... It's not that hard. I mean...
You just kind of sit there.
You do. Like, I mean, like... I've had to go out to, like... I think it was, like, Valentine's Day last... Like, this... Well, I don't want to say last year. It's almost last year. Where we went out to this barn she was working at. And I was just kind of noticing how she was riding. So, like, she doesn't really sit all the way. She's kind of, like, on her legs.
That's what sort of a bouncing Sayla was doing.
Movement. Yeah, exactly. So that's like, I mean, that's really interesting. So that they would pay that much attention to it. Cause I think if my girlfriend saw it and they did something wrong, she'd be like, that's not how you ride a horse. And she'll probably complain about it for 20 minutes.
They had Sayla talk about like the different, techniques, like galloping and something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember the other term.
I am a city suburb kid. So I know nothing of those things. So interesting enough, like, I've dated one girl before when I was in high school that was into horses too. For some reason, like, I keep the girls that like me are like country girls. Well, the one you know of, the one I'm going out with, she's not like an actual country girl. Like, we're nerds, mm-hmm. But she also likes horses too. So,
I mean,
the other one I went out with when I was like 15, she was like into country western music and trying to get me into listening to it. And I was like, no. I was like, I like my crappy techno music from 2000. Yay.
You're too busy with your Bruce Falconer music.
Yeah, there's no Kobe teeth in that. Toby Keith, whatever.
Toby Keith, yeah.
Alan Jackson. Yeah, I had to work at Alan Jackson concert one time. I don't know. When you work concerts, it's depending on the crowd, they're actually pretty fun.
What were you doing? Security or something? Or
parking. It was this other job I did.
I remember this.
When I lived in Raleigh.
Yeah.
We had to go to Virginia. It was like a 2-hour drive to go to Virginia. And then like to work, I think it might have been Richmond or something. And we all had to pile in vans to go work a parking event for an Alan Jackson concert, which felt like in the middle of nowhere.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, and anyways, that was my only job, and I got paid for travel time and everything, and I brought like my DS with like Final Fantasy III and just kind of played it between like the two biggest black dudes.
And I was did you hear about this Final Fantasy VII remake? They're going to make it like three parts or something and release it like one part every couple of years or something like that. They're going to like drag it out and get $180 out of the fans somehow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get it on discount on Steam when the last one comes out. It'll be released on Steam. You know, I mean, I know it, so.
I have the original.
Yeah, those diehard Final Fantasy fans will pay anything to get that.
Yeah. My dad got the original for PC at some garage sale, but I have never gotten around to playing it.
I've told you about like my PC copy again in high school, and it stopped during the Chocobo race, and that's as far as I've ever gotten.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I might have said that story before.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, we're already in closing remarks. We've got really nothing else to say about Gundam. We're actually pretty nice to Gundam this time. We're not making fun of any Gundam fans or anything. I'm on my best behavior.
Yeah, because we didn't look them up to know what stuff they were saying to make fun of. So
exactly.
So
if we don't know their opinion, that's fine with me.
We kind of issued it a preemptive strike. We like predicted what they were going to say and denounced it ahead of time.
All right.
Because we know they're going to complain about the CGI, because that's how modern anime fans are.
I think I've got all my rambunctiousness out on Friday night when I did our previous episode of my drunken endeavors of reading off what was on the Right Stuff website at 1 a.m. because you weren't online.
Okay, so I was not online because my dog keeps waking me up at 3 a.m. begging for food and I was tired.
I'm pulling a Daft Punk fan excuse right now because I'm putting all that blame on you.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your excuse?
Okay, so my dog lately has been waking up at 3 a.m. and waking up everyone whining, begging for food, and it's like really cutting into my sleep, so I went to bed really early because you said your download was going at like 1 kilobyte per second, and I was like, okay, this isn't gonna finish tonight.
Oh,
but then it ended up finishing like 20 minutes after I went to bed or something. So,
and I was like, John, you won. And I was just like, because I've had this bottle of bourbon whiskey and like our my parents' meat fridge for like maybe 2 years.
Vintage.
And I kind of remember it was still back there. Actually, I kind of forgot. And I was putting some deer meat back there because we have people kill deer for us all the time. And, you know, we just have them we pay for the processing. So we have like meat to last us like about a year. And well, depending on the size. And so it's back there and I see it and I'm like, I just need to go ahead and finish that off. And so I had it next to me last night, or not last night, but like Friday night. And I was like waiting for you to get on and I was doing stuff and then I just started mixing it and then I got like the rest of my Coke and just poured it into the bottle, into the actual whiskey bottle, so like it all mixed up pretty well. And so then I just started reading the Right Stuff list and just complained about everything and I was like, you know, that'd be a good idea if I just did a recording like that. And so I did. 35 minutes of me going, don't buy that. Don't buy that. Don't buy that. That's crap. That's crap. That's crap. Don't buy that. Don't buy that. Porn's bad. Stay away from porn.
Yeah. There were like two or three things you recommended, which was I think that Gundam the Origin manga.
Gogo 13. I think I said Apocalypse Zero.
And Redline.
It's about right. Yeah, I stand by. I regret nothing. That's another Daft punk fan quote. I regret nothing I did. Everything I did is just and noble.
What he usually does is not provide a service like reading out the catalog. What he usually does is just swearing at us.
No, I was on my best behavior in that recording, surprisingly.
So. There was quite a bit of, I need another drink, and I need to go pee.
I was like, all right, page 5. God, I got a piss! Oh... I literally just like, as soon as I was over, I was like, God, I hope this doesn't save. And I just clicked end and then I just saved it and just, and turned off my monitor and went straight to bed and crashed. And, I woke up in the morning and I was just like, well, let me just listen to this. And I did. And it's just, I didn't edit anything out of it. Everything's the way it's supposed to be.
So did you order any of that stuff?
No.
Oh.
Not, I guess not, I wasn't drunk enough.
I noticed you were about to order Inuyasha, and then you realized your girlfriend doesn't have a Blu-ray player.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man. Like, yeah, how I wasn't, like, banking. I wasn't, like, just adding on comedy. Like, oh, let me sound really retarded and talking. No, that's just how I was talking. I think I got gradually a little bit better by the end of that recording, so... I just know there was things I was trying to count, and I was like 20 or something. I had an before a number. Like, that's a real number.
My favorite was when you were trying to do the Devil Man, and you couldn't tell whether it was $1 or $2 because it was $1.99. So you kept going like, $1.99, so $2.
Well, my rounding mathematic mechanic in my brain was working well enough.
You figured it out eventually.
One penny extra, who cares? No, like, I counted up GoGo 13, I was like, it's like 28, 29 bucks or something. Just get GoGo 13.
I noticed there were some Gatchaman deals in there, too.
Yeah, I mentioned that, too. You know, write stuff out of cut us a check for that. That's my argument. I think I did a pretty good promotion. Look, people are going to buy whatever they want. That's just my opinion. I even wrote that in the comments, but I'm just like, at least you know my favorite picks. Like, if anybody buys that stuff and credits me or our podcast for, like, thank God I listened to that audio drunken commentary of Right Stuff website, and these guys got me to spend $300 on Apocalypse Zero and Gatchaman and GoGo 13, that would be like, we need about 25% of those profits and ads and ad revenue and promotion, so...
So this year I got on there the Goemon anime for $5, the whole thing.
Oh yeah, I did.
The first set of I can never remember the name of it, but it's the second show of Voltron, the one that with the vehicles. Die Ruger, I think.
Oh, okay.
And the other two are like out of stock.
Go Lion? No, that's the Japanese name.
Yeah, Go Lion. I already saw Go Lion. I got that on there a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a very...
After Daddy's Voltron.
It's very interesting, yeah, Go Lion. How violent mecha anime were back then. I like, at the same time, it's really childish and like extremely bloody. Like, there's one episode where the evil alien guys, they sick these monsters on a village, and they're like cutting old women in half, and they're like bleeding everywhere and shit, and it's like, wow, this is a kid's anime. How did Voltron handle this? I think Voltron, they just made everybody into a robot or something so that the massive amounts of deaths didn't get to kids.
I know Jeff from the Daily Anime Podcast said he like watched all of, I think it was Daitarn 3. And he's just like, dude, that's such a depressing mecha show. And everyone just dies in that show.
Yeah, that's how mecha anime is.
Yeah.
Especially this one that we just saw.
Kids need to learn about death as quickly as possible and buy our product. Kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, another thing that I mentioned in the chat, but I think not in here, is that there was a brief scene where they had shown, I think it was Young Hamon smoking. Or maybe it was young, whatever no, the name of Artesia's mother is.
Yeah, you're talking about the girl at the bar stool, right? When they're talking, like, they're talking, the, Char's mom and Haman reminiscing of their old days.
Yeah, maybe maybe it was Australia or whatever her name is. That,
Austria, I want to say Austria, but I'm like, fine, Austria, whatever.
I think it was Australia without the U, but I might be wrong. But something like that. But Artesia's mother was like smoking in there as a kid, and then she was like coughing. It was like, yeah, it's supposed to be funny, but usually yeah. You don't see smoking in animation anymore because it's so politically incorrect with the government trying to ban cigarettes and everything.
Well, I mean, I think with this being an OVA, it's I mean, it's kind of like it's not doesn't have to appeal to a wider audience except for the Gundam fans, and it's more creative control when you have it as an OVA like this. So maybe the smoking ban only goes to kids shows now.
Yeah,
and even in you know, like One Piece, Sanji is always smoking, so it's not like this is like a total thing in Japan like it is here. Like,
yeah,
I don't think that they're allowed to show smoking in like basically anything that's produced for American television anymore because they're afraid it will promote smoking among young people or something.
Well, according to those freaking anti-smoking ad campaigns and the trendsetting of vaping, then I think people are going to stop cigarettes eventually.
Well, let's hope, but I wouldn't count on it. But they sure do air a lot of those on Toonami, the real cost of smoking. They have like an ad for it at the start of each
Intruder 2. Yeah, every start of every episode is like that. Like, yeah. The cost of smoking, yeah.
If you knew what smoking did to you, you'd run like hell. And then it shows like some weird like monster or something.
So, like a monster out of like a Doom 3 model or something that never got used. Or
yeah, it's some really ugly like CGI spider or something.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Intruder 2, have you you've been seeing all that, right? The
what?
The first 4 or 5 episodes that have aired of Intruder 2. On Toonami?
Yeah, I saw the I got back really late Saturday and I got in time to watch like that episode of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
So then I was able to catch the Intruder 2 that video clip for that week.
That episode that aired last Saturday is why Dragon Ball Z has the reputation of nothing happening for a whole episode. Because even in Kai format, the whole thing was Goku standing around while Frieza powers up and says, "Now I'm at 78% of my full potential. Now I'm at 79% of my full potential."
80, 81, 82. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like Dragon Ball Z at its worst right there.
King Cut. Goku, take him out now. You don't want him to be powerful. If I take him out now, then I won't. Then I can beat him at his best, and that makes me the best ever, because I gotta gush off my dick. Dragon Ball Z in a nutshell, everyone.
I mean, really, Goku should have just killed the guy while he was powering up.
Yeah, like, who cares if he's 100%? Like, God, you're a very prideful person. You are a Saiyan.
And then then Frieza gets to come back later on and try to destroy the Earth, and Goku isn't even going to be there in time if it weren't for the whole weird stuff about time travel and Bulma's and Vegeta's and son showing up.
Oh, no, if Goku showed up, he'd be like, I want to see Frieza power up. I go, no, Goku, Earth has already been resurrected once. I don't care.
Yeah, he would have let the Earth be destroyed. And then later on, Frieza does destroy the Earth and the new movie.
In a movie, you can't have those spoiler stuff happen like or filler stuff happen like that. So,
well, the new season of Dragon Ball Z, the Super,
yeah,
is they're adapting the movies and dragging it out a whole lot. So that each movie lasts something like 13 episodes, or they've just started on the Resurrection of Frieza arc, and they've brought back the Ginyu Frog.
Okay.
So it's like the original Frieza battle all over again in the anime, with how they keep showing this frog standing on the sidelines every few minutes. And, well, it looks like the frog is going to swap bodies with the bald alien, Tagoma or something, one of the henchmen. But okay. I don't know why they bothered with this other than just filler. They just felt like doing some more Ginyu Frog shit. And they seem to love the Ginyu Frog at Toei.
Wait till they get the redo a filler episode where everyone has to take their driving test, including Ginyu Frog! What'll happen when he tries getting in a car? We'll find out this week in this week's episode of Ginyu Frog. I don't know.
They should just do a whole spinoff about Ginyu Frog, yeah.
Yeah, Toei can spend money on stupid stuff like that. all right, well, yeah, we're already in closing remarks anyways, but... So, the only things I can think that we mentioned is that Ghost is back. Well, he came back briefly, like last month, for like 30 minutes of him just saying, "I told you so," and "check out the damn archive."
Yeah. He predicted supposedly everything that happened in the Middle East in the last 5 years or something.
Yeah.
He was like, "Well, this Muslim group is bad and this one is good, and I told you so years ago." And
if you don't believe me, go check out the damn archive.
The damn
archive. Now, I just, like, I heard it on my car ride to school.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, I don't really care about your fact checking. This is just interesting. And then he gets, like, those moments where he gets really mad when he talks about, like, the government spending, and he just goes like, money. Calm down now.
I don't think he did any canned sounds, did he?
No, I think it took him 3 years to clean all that out.
Yeah, I wonder if he's gone sober or if he just didn't have any with him at the moment.
Well, if he wants to come back, he'd be getting back to drinking hard.
I did notice that the engineer made a return, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still sounds pretty much the same.
Oh.
So for Chris Chan updates, some of this stuff I'm going to skip over because it's just too gross. There was one video he put out recently where I like listened to the audio, but I couldn't bring myself to look at it. And it's like about some sort of tranny nonsense, and it's just disgusting. But there's one here that's about GameStop, which was pretty amusing. So he's been trying to boycott GameStop. He's put out a few videos telling people,
He's putting out an embargo on GameStop.
Yeah.
I don't believe he knows how an embargo works.
Yeah. Best Buy as well.
Yeah. And he's only doing this in order to get himself unbanned from those two locations.
Yeah.
And he's commending everyone and the millions of thousands of millions of people that are his fans that he believes he has to not shop at those places, and that's the embargo.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, there's also the other, 6-point-something trillion other people that shop at those places.
Did you hear the part in the video where he said that he drives to the Fort Hood military base to buy stuff at the GameStop there for his amiibos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far Fort Hood is, but I'm like, well, dude, you gotta do what you gotta do because you put that on yourself.
Well, I have a feeling if he keeps going there, he's gonna get raped by some military man or something.
I don't think the military would. The military has higher standards than that.
Yeah, I suppose that's right. They
will go after either hotter gay men or hotter women.
With Chris Obama, Chan
is neither one.
Obama is letting in women now into like the active military, so they're gonna have plenty of better pickings than Chris Chan to and plus they allow gays in the military.
I don't know how well that's gonna happen anyways, but
But anyway, there's a Facebook post here that I'm going to read from him. We have received a response from GameStop, and it is certainly not good news at all. We must protest further, because not only me, they have a habit of banning multiple customers. They discriminate of anything Battletoads. They destroy all of their unsold games instead of donating them to hospitals, children, and whatnot. GameStop, bleeding unfair to autistics, LGBTQ, and practically everybody. Hashtag HRC, hashtag human rights campaign, hashtag autism, hashtag autism awareness. Hashtag BBB, hashtag Better Business Bureau, hashtag GameStop, hashtag LameStop. I think I killed my audio by saying LameStop. But I just love that. And then he posted a form from GameStop, that their response to him. I can't get it to... Oh, here we go. But I'm pretty sure this is fake. I think this must be a troll that sent this, but they said that, this letter is to inform you that your petition to remove your existing ban from our GameStop retail location in St. Charlottesville, Virginia was received and forwarded to our corporate safety and loss prevention team per company policy for review. I was assigned your case number and have assigned legal files concerning your assault of our employees and interviewed the managers. While your patronage is appreciated, we have concluded, based on extensive evaluation of your case, that expanding the current local ban to a statewide ban would be in the best interest of both parties.
Oh my gosh.
We take the safety of our employees and customer base very seriously and believe that the precedents set by your previous behavior and threatening tone of your letter towards one of our valued employees, unfortunately, indicates a high likelihood of future conflict. I have enclosed a complete list of GameStop retail stores where you are no longer permitted for your convenience. Please be aware that our employees will be instructed to contact local law enforcement for immediate intervention if you should enter the premises of any of these locations. We hope you will consider our GameStop online resources as a viable alternative for all your game-related needs. And then it says, best wishes, Russ Rogerson, Corporate Safety and Loss Prevention Division, Grapevine, Texas, GameStop Corporate Office. And so I suspect this is fake, but this is pretty much how the real GameStop would react if they gave a damn.
Yes.
Which is not giving in to his ridiculous demands. Basically, he tried to blackmail the person that he had previously assaulted, yeah, and said that he was going to report them to the Better Business Bureau for having a job at GameStop and at Best Buy, which, first off, he doesn't even know if they work at Best Buy because he's never seen them there.
Yeah.
But he assumes that they do, and that they were spreading information about his pepper spray there because of the fact that he says the management at Best Buy was worried that he was going to pepper spray them and told him to leave. And so he thinks that this must be because of the GameStop guy, not because of the fact that he's like a well-known local criminal.
Yeah.
So he's like totally unaware of how widely hated he is. And he thinks that this is all like some oppression campaign by the trolls and the ass manager from...
Yeah.
From GameStop.
It's just amazing that, like, he pulls out the LGBT community card on it. Like, it's discriminating because of this role in this card that I'm pulling out now that I believe I'm totally part of and everything. And that's when I was just like, oh, this doesn't even concern them. That's not even what it's about. But then he's just pulling it up because of discrimination, because it's a card and he's waving around like, you're discriminating against me. Like, it's like, oh, you know, I'm calling the LGBT BBQ police or whatever.
And the funniest thing of all is that he is not even homosexual. He likes women. And he just pretends to be a woman so that he can claim to be a lesbian.
The whole claim of the lesbian soul in a male's body.
Right.
Which is so, just a straight guy.
Right, he just made up this nonsense about a trans woman lesbian thing that he claims to be, and so that he could have like an extra layer of oppression to complain about, as well as the autism. You know, he has to have some extra hashtags to stick in there to make his campaign more effective. It has to stick in the human rights campaign, because everybody has a human right to go into GameStop and pepper spray people and vandalize the Sonic property and all the awful behavior he's engaged in there. Plus what he did at the other game stores, I'm sure plays a role in it too. The GameStop guys went to his trial, and they know about the fact that he tried to run over Michael Snyder at the game place, and that he was filming Michael Snyder's daughter, and that he has showed up at the store drunk, and that he has yelled at children in the store who wanted to play on the Wii, and he was, like, hogging it, and that he just was a total nuisance at the store for many years. So why on earth would they want him to behave like this at GameStop when he hasn't matured at all?
That's some things you wish they could change, but they just haven't.
Yeah. I mean, they keep sending him to, like, a psychiatric help after these trials and stuff, and it just doesn't seem to be doing any good whatsoever, because he seems as deranged as ever.
Oh, well, speaking of deranged people, the latest thing on the news was Donald Trump and his own embargo on all Muslim people and denouncing them citizenship in the United States.
Yeah,
and people are going to vote for this guy.
He said that no more Muslims will arrive under his watch. And this is, I'm sure it's going to help him in the polls. He's just been going up and up since the well, since he announced, really, but even more since the Paris thing and now the San Bernardino thing. The more terrorism happens, the more he's going to go up in the numbers, and I'm going to predict it here and now that he will be the next president.
It wouldn't surprise me if he's the next president. I rather would have Ben Carson or anybody else. I hate to say this, but I really am maybe swaying towards the Democratic Party.
Oh, really?
I never thought I'd say that.
Vote for Hillary over Donald?
I'm even desperate enough to go to Bernie Sanders. That's bad.
Yeah. I mean, we've got the choice here between fascism and communism coming up, and I'm not sure I'm going to vote for either one of them. I'll probably vote Libertarian Party again.
Yeah. I mean, my thought on the whole, like, I mean, we got our governors and everything that are they're like opposing letting in Syrian refugees into America. And then, of course, they're only going to accept the Syrian Christians. And the thing about that is the fact that it's like I can definitely understand the reasoning. It's like, oh, well, part of the Christian religion is the fact that you don't wage war against anybody. There's no jihad in the Christian religion. So they're actually a whole lot more peaceful than the Muslims and everything, and people who believe in Islam. However, that is in a way, like, I have a reason to sort of support the governor's decision at this current time. Because my thought on that is the fact that the reason why Paris has those terrorist attacks and everything is the fact that you take 1,000 Muslims or whatever, and you've got that one that we call the one asshole, and you got that one jerk or that a-hole that's going to screw it up for everybody else and give him a bad name, which is people who are the terrorists or ISIS or whatever. The other 999 are not that bad. However, it's a risk of, like, hey, we let in these 999 people, but one of them was the bad apple. And, you know, no, not every single one of them are bad people. I don't mind, like, you know, whatever. But if for the safety of America at this current time, it shouldn't be our problem. And, like, I don't like saying that either. Like, I hate to say that, but, like, in a logical sense, it's like, for right now, it's not a good thing. Again, it's only going to get worse from there. And that's just how I kind of feel about it. I mean, and I know people probably, if they heard this, and I know some people are going to be like, oh, you're totally wrong. It's like, well, I don't like it more than you do, but logically speaking, it's like, you know, we just had the San Bernardino, you know, we just had the shooting in San Bernardino or the terrorist attack there. And those are people that had under visas and citizenship and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you never know. And then you got people that are mad at Muslims, which is a bad thing, but because they had, like, CBS News had people like city councils that were like protesting against setting up a mosque in their town because they think it's like a thing for, you know, terrorism. And I'm like, no, that's not true. Like, no, that every single one of them want to go out there and kill us and commit jihad or whatever. I mean, granted, it's, I think I'm pretty sure in the Quran it's about like kill all the infidels or something like that. And I mean, hopefully they may change that, but then, but people or the people of Islam are like, well, that's not entirely, you know, we're not going to kill anybody. That's like, okay, it's fine, whatever.
Well, I mean, there's parts of it where it says like, that you should go out and wage war against the non-believers. And there's parts where it says like anyone who kills a man is killing all of mankind. So you can like cherry pick whatever part you want to support, like your pre-existing, bias towards violence or towards peace, and most people are not inclined to go and blow themselves up to further their religion or whatever. But there are people who are, and so it's dangerous to, you know, when there's a region of the world where a large portion of it has been taken over by radicals who are, you know, not in favor of anything that's remotely like Western civilization, to not let people from that region into the U.S., because all the factions in Syria that are fighting are basically all fighting for some sort of Sharia law or for chopping off the heads of people who disagree with their interpretation of Islam, and it's just too much of a risk to let in people from that part of the world. So I understand where Donald is coming from, but at the same time, he goes too far because he says stuff like, 25% of Muslims are jihadists, and 51% want Sharia law. And he had like a bunch of statistics that he said when he was announcing this ban.
But he probably wrote on a crayon in the back of a paper, you know, paper plate or something. Is like, yeah, this is legit. This totally works.
But then people were like, oh, these statistics aren't credible or whatever. I don't know if they're credible or not. But
I don't think they are credible. There's no way they could be credible.
But
I
mean, but like, they do seem too high, because that would be hundreds of millions of people, and they're just
that's one out of four that are gonna like try maybe kill you that day. I mean, like that's still way too high.
But even if the risk is lower than that, which it probably is. It's still too high to go along with importing like millions of people from these godforsaken countries.
Yeah.
And so I understand it, and I do get that there's some sort of need for the federal government to stop this immigration, because when the states try to do it on their own, well, we saw here in Arizona what happened. We tried to they passed a law here trying to, you know, if the police have a suspicion that someone who's already been pulled over for a criminal action is an illegal immigrant, that they can ask for their papers. And for some reason, the court said, well, being suspicious of an illegal immigrant who's committed a crime is not reason enough for wanting to know their papers and wanting to know who they are and where they came from and if they can be deported. And so they just stopped Arizona from enforcing this law that we passed. So the federal government needs to do something if they're not going to let us do something to get the immigration situation under control, because there are drug cartels here from Mexico. There are illegal immigrants from Syria that are causing problems, and there are even legal immigrants from Syria that are causing problems. So, I mean, something has to be done, because it's clear the situation is out of control, but at the same time, you don't want to overreact the way Donald is, where Donald says he wants like a database of every Muslim, and he wants to have spies in every mosque, and he wants to do all these things that people are comparing to like
here,
Nazi
hey,
policies.
Hey, here's the question. Who's paying for it?
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
gonna cost money. Money we don't need to spend.
It is gonna be tough to put a spy on the tail of every single Muslim when there's God knows how many of them here.
Yeah, and if you find out they're a spy, like, the spy's probably gonna die, and that's gonna be a murder thing. It's just a mess, and
Yeah, because the more we go after them, the more they want to strike back at us, and they're going to feel persecuted if he gets elected, and they're going to commit more terrorism.
Like, our nation does not need what we need to happen, what we did in World War II, where we put all the Muslims, where we put a race of people into concentrate our own little concentration camps, like we did with the Japanese. We don't need to do that again. And on the way Donald Trump is saying, that's, he's like, well, that's our own, like, that's other than like exterminating them all through a Holocaust, that'll be the option before that. And I'm like, we don't need to do either one of them. So
yeah, that Supreme Court Justice Scalia said something a few years ago, something like, well, if you think the concentration camps for Japanese wouldn't happen again in a time of war, you're kidding yourself. We would allow it again on the Supreme Court if it came up. So I do think that you know, Trump will do whatever he thinks he can get away with, and mm-hmm. probably the other branches of government will roll over and let him do whatever he wants. And this guy
he's got the money.
This guy is dangerous because whenever anyone criticizes him, he says he's going to sue them, and then he does because he has all these rich lawyers, and he says that they're libeling him and slandering him just for saying things about him that are often true but aren't flattering. So it's like, what's going to happen to the First Amendment when someone like that, who has no respect for free speech, is president, who has no respect for freedom of religion, who has no respect for private property, who tries to eminent domain like little old ladies' houses to make a parking lot for his gambling casino. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy is like a really bad guy in a lot of ways, but at the same time, the situation we're in is so bad that a lot of people are so desperate that they want this guy. And I kind of get it, but at the same time, it's like,
dude, it's when you're that desperate, you don't think straight. And when you don't think straight, the mess you're in, it gets even worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he's never had elected office. He's not going to know what to do if he gets in there. He's totally inexperienced. His whole career is just making loudmouth comments on television and like flipping properties. And like, this guy's going to be able to rule the world. Like, I don't know how well this is going to turn out, but I think we're going to see, because I think he will be president.
Scary thought.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know, unless he gets, I mean, like, I think people won't complain when gas is like 60 cents a gallon or something. And like, oh, well, we're making all this surplus of money. And because he's good at that, because he knows money. But in terms of like making peace with other nations, like, if they don't hate America as much as they do now, they will hate it immensely more if he's in office.
Well, he does say that he's going to take all the oil in the Middle East, and that's going to be like a recipe for disaster. Because, I mean, if he sends in, well, he says he's going to send in Exxon and they're going to take the oil, but how is Exxon going to fight ISIS for the oil when Exxon doesn't have their own army?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Exxon is an oil company, not a PCM or a private military company.
Right.
Firm. They're not mercenaries. They're just an oil company.
I mean, if Exxon wants to hire Blackwater and take the oil from ISIS, I'm all for it. Let them do it. But we don't need to have the military going in and doing this. And if that's Donald's proposal, fine. But these oil men are not going to be able to do it themselves. I mean,
we're going to take everyone that works in an oil rig, send them to a weekend retreat of firearms and survival training. And then we're going to put them in front of ISIS. And we may double their pay.
The world is so strange, isn't it?
Yeah. America, what a great country. Why do you think I want to move to Japan so bad?
Yeah. Nippon Banzai.
Yeah. I mean, my only fear in Japan would be like if the North Koreans abduct me or something. I mean, that's about it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that'd be an international incident if that gets out.
You're probably more lucky there than in South Korea or something. They have to swim across the ocean or something to get you.
Yeah, that's too much effort.
Yeah.
They may just give up.
And as
long as I don't work on monster movies and they kidnap me in order to make, like, Plogosari 2 or something.
That might be kind of fun, making a Pulgasari movie.
Alright, are you guys familiar with what CGI animation is? Alright, we're going to use Blender and Unity, and we're going to do a whole course on how to get this done. In return, I ask you to feed your people and not let them starve. It's like, how desperately do you guys want to watch Pulgasari 2? These are on my demands, not yours. I'm calling the shots. I don't know. It might be cool. Like, there might be that really awesome mansion with like 300 Ferraris, like in The Interview. But The Interview was a bad movie. So.
The Interview.
I saw that on Netflix, and
so did I. But who thought that was a good idea to make that movie?
Fox did.
Wasn't it Sony?
Oh yeah, it was Sony. Crap.
But what's baffling to me is Sony is in Japan, but they made a movie that's like poking fun at North Korea, which is always firing missiles towards Japan. So like they must have known this would be a provocation.
Over them, like, or they've done it in the past. It's just like, and then they're like ticked off at them, and then they're like, "Oh, me so sorry, me don't know how button works." Yeah, I mean,
I do hope that they collapse at some point. I mean, I don't know how North Korea existed for 60 years.
That's a good point.
It's really amazing how deeply a population can get brainwashed by communism if they're totally cut off from the rest of the world. I mean, North Korea isn't like China, where they have electricity and internet, and like, even though China censors some stuff, basically you can still use the internet. But in North Korea, they don't have any technology beyond like decades ago.
Maybe?
They've had like no advancement at all since the communists took over, and the only the ruling elite in the capital have electricity, and everyone else is starving, and they're like a foot shorter than the South Koreans, and it's just terrible. And I guess they're just so cut off from the outside world, they don't even realize how bad they've got it compared to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
It's a really tragic situation.
Well, no nation lasts forever. So one day South Korea will be liberated or collapse on itself. And
North Korea, yeah.
Yeah.
My aunt is from South Korea, and she like lived there when it was not as wealthy as South Korea is now, like, because you know, after the Korean War, it was kind of like decimated, and it was not even as wealthy as the North, which was in pretty bad shape too, but since then they've gotten highly developed down there, and it's really a sharp contrast between the capitalist South and the communist North. And they have like really fast internet there, like faster than the U.S., like some of the fastest in the world, and along with Japan. And just interesting how much a place can advance in 50 years. I'd like to go there sometime. I've been to Japan, but you know, I'm kind of hesitant about South Korea, just because you never know when North Korea is going to try something on them, firing across the demilitarized zone or something, and start some big incident. You don't want to be there when that happens.
If you want to teach English in South Korea, they're always like, that's like a huge hot spot to get, you know, to get English people or people to teach English there. I mean, same with Japan, but I think it's like more so in South Korea.
Yeah. The thing about that is, though, like, I feel like hesitant to teach English to people if I don't know their language, because I feel like I won't be able to as effectively communicate with them.
Yeah.
And I had teachers in high school who I'm sure are fearing the Trump phenomenon, my Turkish teachers, who barely knew English. And so they come over here and they try to teach us Turkish, but they don't have any words to relate their word to our word, so they're just speaking in Turkish at us, and we don't have a clue what they're saying. And it's like, okay, I've heard of total immersion, but this is a bridge too far.
Man, we've been going on closing remarks. I think it's longer, if not longer, than Gundam the Origin. Not as long.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is what we get when we don't really. We haven't had like a decent close. I mean, like, we did sort of closing remarks when we had Gerald on in our second to last episode.
But not as long.
Yeah, not as long as this, like, where we can just get into politics and just make fun of everything. And
the other thing that I wanted to say for my closing remarks is not as humorous as some of the other stuff, but my grandmother did die about a week ago, and she was at a nursing home, and she had choked on some dinner because she was, like, having a hard time eating in her last few weeks. Mm-hmm. But she was really getting demented, and she was always hallucinating and thinking it was decades before it actually was, and seeing things that weren't there, and so maybe in the end it's all for the best that she doesn't have to suffer anymore, but still a sad situation, and I just want to say rest in peace to my grandmother.
No, you get one of those too. Like, I had people pass, like, in the summer too, so that I knew. So I'm sorry to hear that. Is that the one that lived in Texas?
Both of them do. One of them is still alive on my father's side, and she's still doing relatively well. She has some like heart problems, but she's still living independently in like a little condo in Austin, and my dad's brothers live a few blocks away in their own house, so they can get there fast if she needs help or anything.
That's how it is on my dad's side, like in New Braunfels. Like, my dad's family, most of them, if not all, is basically like around, all around within the like New Braunfels, San Antonio area. And so, like, that's where that's like my last surviving grandmother, who's still there, and she's still in the same house they grew up in, my dad grew up in, and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so she's doing well for 80-something, and to be quite honest, if she makes it to, like, about 100, it would not surprise me.
Yeah. My grandmother, the one who's still alive, is, like, much sharper than the one who is at the nursing home. Like, she has a iPhone that she's always getting updated, and she went to the midnight premiere of the Twilight movies, I remember. So she's, like, still up on all the current trends or whatever, despite being in her 80s or so.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The grandmother I have now, she's actually, like, a great-grandmother at this point. And, I mean, even I don't think I remember ever meeting my great-grandmother when I was, like, a baby or whatever. So, like, it's really glad that. So that's, I don't think a lot of people really get that chance to ever see their great-grandmother or survive that long or something, so.
Yeah, I never knew any great-grandmothers. It's starting to go down in the quality, I guess we should end it pretty soon here. So for things to look forward to for our audience, we've got some ideas for upcoming episodes planned. Like, I recently watched on VHS Space Adventure Cobra, the movie from Urban Vision. And that's something that we've been talking about on this podcast for a long time because you're a big fan of it. And I finally saw it. It's a good movie. Yeah, we've got to review it.
Yeah, I got the Nozomi collection or the Right Stuff collection like last year on the on DVD, the TV series.
Uh-huh.
And then I've got the Discotech movie release of that too. So we can definitely sit down sometime in the next few episodes and review that.
Did you see the movie a long time ago? Because I remember you being a fan of Cobra before you got the series.
Yeah, I did see the movie a few years ago, and then I eventually got the movie on DVD. And I actually remember, I did thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
And also, in terms of, we got our Christmas, we usually do a Christmas special every year because we put out our podcast, at the beginning of, January or something. So it'll be coming up 3 years, and we're pretty much going to do our typical, Christmas special. But then also, we need to go ahead and plan on, I guess we're still going to bring people on and do a backstory podcast because that's something we've been talking about since forever.
Yeah. And also I was going to get Daft and Josh and Cloud on and talk about the new Digimon movie as well. But Josh still hasn't seen it, so I'm not sure when that'll happen. He's busy with college, and he said he gets out on the 18th, so probably sometime late December.
Yeah, it'll be sometime on the break, so yeah, don't worry about it. I mean, like, don't rush to get it done or anything, so...
Daft is unlikely to actually show up for it, because Daft has not shown up for any podcasting quite a while.
That's true.
And when he does, he's, like, usually drunk or something and gets off within a few minutes.
Oh, no, like, on Facebook, when I posted up the drunk podcast, he was just like, why didn't you tell me? And my first thought is like, oh, so because I decided to do this, you feel like you're entitled to show up on the episode drunk because I did it. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I saw that he was...
I knew that. It was in the back of my mind, I'm like, part of me says this is a bad idea releasing it.
Yeah, he was saying something like, yeah, I would have fit in well on that episode. I should have been on with him in the AIM chat as well.
The flame we hold is as good as gold, Bonanza. Hand in hand we built this land, Ponderosa Ranch. Our birthright is this Cartwright Bonanza. We here belong and standing strong. Wrong ain't got a chance. Day by day, worker play, ready side by side. Hello, friend, come on in. The gate is open wide. Bound to be a bright and free Bonanza. Singing pines and boundary lines for the Ponderosa Ranch.